I didn't know him. It was, I think I was just about to do Offbeat, or maybe I'd done it. I didn't know Joe yet.
Those came out within like a year of each other. So yeah, I don't.
Okay, so the New York Crew guys, you see, I broke into the business. I love people. My friend Smitty, a London Cockney, God rest his soul. Some people say I broke in. Yeah, I did theater. I got seen by God rest his soul, Lou DiGiamo. Dan Loria got me in a play called Vespers Eve about the formation of the crime syndicate. And I played Dutch Schultz. And I was seen in that. And he put me in a very controversial movie called Cruising, directed by William Friedkin.
Which was
great experience. Anyway, I remember, well, I knew like Grips and Teamsters and Electra, and still do. A lot of people have retired, and it always feels weird for me to go back to New York if there's only a few guys I know. But it was a really different time and some real characters. And they all came up to me. So many people came up to me and said, there's this guy, Joe Mantegna. He is absolutely hysterical. And so he's doing these scenes you can't believe. Cut out for whatever reason. He was so great. And Joe, I know, did Hair, I believe, in Chicago in the late 60s. And, you know,
that's right.
It was interesting. I've heard Joe interview, but we've talked about this personally. In that era, it was like people had to work on New York accents. All the things that were being done before Mammoth and whatnot were like a New York voice, as it were, you know, in New York theater. And they started creating their own. And I saw you mention Godfather 3. I was reading, you know, the thing you sent that next to his name. I told them one of my favorite movies. I love House of Games, but one of my favorite movies, my brother Jimmy got his soul, Vietnam veteran, all this stuff. He used to tell me Things Change with Don Ameche.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Joe, I mean, it just had the most beautiful feeling and story, you know? The other day when I was speaking, they asked me to recommend movies, and I just didn't even think of it, you know? It kind of threw me. They were saying, oh, what performances do you like? And I'm like, I don't know. I like Cinema Paradiso. I don't know. And I'm talking to them about films like 40 years ago, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A lot of people feel the 70s was the highlight of American filmmaking. You know,
I think that's early a pretty, 70s. Yeah, that's a pretty, you know, a pretty good mark for the wide creativity, you know?
Yeah.
You know, the spectrum, I mean, of what was released in that time is kind of amazing. In fact, it's funny, you know, speaking of 70s movies, we've got a new print of The Conversation playing
in
Chicago at the Music Box. And then The Godfather is getting a national re-release for one night next month in select theaters.
Is it a combined one and two? Because that's my favorite.
No, it's just one. Because it's its 50th anniversary. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So I guess Coppola is putting out a new 4K, you know, HD, you know, Blu-ray out. So they're celebrating its anniversary by putting it in theaters for a night too, which I'm excited to go see. If I have a chance to see Apocalypse Now or the Godfather films in the theater, I take it. You know,
one of these days, maybe I should hook you up with Tom Wright, my friend. He directed a lot of NCIS and whatnot, but he's done.
Okay.
He goes back to Hitchcock days, he was also, I don't want to make him sound like gung-ho. Yeah, I did this and that. And he just wound up somehow being in Southeast Asia and doesn't talk about it much, but he was an artist and a sketch guy. And he sketched for Coppola the invasion. He helped choreograph it. But he has some of the funniest stories about, I mean, just the filming. I know there's been Redux, there's been this, Heart of Darkness. Fascinating. Yeah. The stories.
I just saw a thing the other day, an interview, why am I blanking on his name? This is great. Two old guys that can't remember anything. Lawrence Fishburne talking about how he saved Emilio Estevez. Well, Emilio Estevez says that Lawrence Fishburne saved his life at one point. They were both about the same age.
Yeah.
you like, I guess Emilio fell into the water and Lawrence, like, you know, got him out.
So. I've heard that. Yeah, I heard something like that.
And I thought that was, you know, you're still learning new things about every, because that movie took forever to film.
Yes. I mean, heart attacks, people being replaced, famous people being fired. I mean, just, you know what I found really interesting was when I watched one of the uncut or whatever, when they showed in Apocalypse Now, the plantation, the French family, and them having dinner there, because it does show, because that was 1954 was the MBN Fu, and this and that, for people who know about it, and it's so interesting, so interesting to see.
The plantation scene is, it's almost like those people are all ghosts in a way, because they're just
there. That's a great way of putting that.
Wow. Yeah, they're there in the middle of nowhere, holding, you know, for whatever, even though during the American, you know, version of the war that they were there for.
It's like, oh, you know.
Yeah, that movie's a trip. I mean, it's still the most amazing. I always go back and forth between like 3, 4, 5 films. This is my favorite, but I have to always put Apocalypse Now as number one because it the grandeur.
Really?
Yeah, the grandeur, the audacity of it. Nobody could make a film like that nowadays.
No. And I thought, well, one of my favorite lines that captured so much about what that was about is when the guy said, "Who's in charge here?" He goes, "I thought you were in charge."
Yeah. It's I think it encapsulates the
confusion,
the rudderlessness of that war.
Yes, rudderlessness. Yeah.
You know, and nobody, everybody. Yeah, everybody just, like, they weren't ever, because they couldn't ever declare it an actual war, so they never did as much as, you know, because it's a whole thing.
There's a lot, discussion for another time.
Yeah, the history of Vietnam is a fascinating, you know, the war is a fascinating thing. Sure.
You know, do you know the one Graham Greene's novel, Brendan Fraser did?
The Quiet
American.
With Michael Caine.
With Michael Caine, one of my idols.
Yeah.
Was it an American or something?
But the The Quiet American.
Yeah, because a lot of people were, you know, they would be in the Peace Corps, but they would be in something else. It's I thought it fascinating because it started showing the cultural difference in the oncoming war. I thought it was always fascinating, that movie.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you about, let me ask you some questions about, one question I want to ask you, because I'm interviewing the director, oddly enough, on Wednesday. You did, it's been since the 80s I've seen this movie, so I don't remember you being in it, but I don't really remember the movie either, as far as what happened in it. I know the movie, but you did Who's That Girl with Madonna. And James Foley is going to be on the show on Wednesday. So I wanted to
great
what,
guy.
What you remember of filming that.
Do you know what's crazy is that it was supposed to be like one day, right? And Gary Bassaraba, a wonderful actor, he did all the talking and he was doing the whole New York thing. And I just had to sit there, right, and go, something like, right. We have a tiger.
There was a tiger in the movie.
Tiger or
panther. Like Madonna ends up walking around with it.
Yeah. And I never dealt with her at all. And what was interesting is that my wife just got into med school. We just moved from the Bronx. I'm trying to do any job I can, whether my brother Jimmy set me up at this bar by the Long Island Railroad, like I'd work a day or two. I was useless. But he threw me, would throw me things at work club. I'm just trying to do anything. We've moved to this foreign country called the Bronx for us, you know, and from being from Queens, I told people I was a social climber. And now I was, whatever it was, I had only a couple of lines. And I remember they had a scheduling thing. I wound up making enough. They kept me 2 weeks. And we barely just made it to go to Disney World. So my wife was in med school. I had 3 kids. And we went to Disney World with the money I got from that. It just showed up, you know? And it was like, wow, we can go to Disney with flight and hotel? Yeah. I mean, I hadn't really we hadn't really as a family or anything traveled that much before it, you know, but it was really funny. It was a great experience, but I can't say much. But James Foley, I also worked. What's my connection with James Foley? Did he No, it's a different one. But James Foley, or maybe on The Natural, his daughter was a PA or something and told me. Okay. But I knew about James Foley. I don't think he directed Collision Course with trying to remember who was a different guy I worked with. I'm sorry. On Collision Course.
Okay.
That was Jay Leno. But I did work with James Foley, I think, on something else. And he was really a nice man and had a tremendous – I mean, I think you have to look at his IMDb, you know.
He did – the first thing I ever saw him do in it's always stuck with me was At Close Range with Christopher Walken and Sean Penn.
Yes.
And then he did Glengarry Glen Ross, which, going back to Joe Mantegna, he originated that role on Broadway that Pacino did. And
Joe got the Tony. Joe was the real Chicago guy, and they were just so brilliant.
What's that?
He goes, "You child, you." Just his voice. I learned from him because I had this crazy energy, and I was always fast. Like I'd see him something like Speed the Plow on Broadway. Just right. How, you know, it was something I always say I try to capture, because I can be energetic, this and that, but even like Costa would talk to me about stillness on camera, and Friedkin would talk to me. But Joe, when you watch him, he can be in live stage, huge theater, and just be so relaxed. You know, I don't mean like nerves. I mean like not feeling he had a push. And I learned so much by watching him. So that's
he has an ease. Yeah, he has an ease about him that I really like.
We have a friend, Tom Riley, who was Woody Allen's AD and producer. And Tom got, through my friend Frank Ranzulli, who wrote the best Sopranos episodes, you know, the first couple of years. But yeah. Frank, our friend Coach Barry Wilson, who's now works with Portland Trailblazers, but he's coached college and this and that. And Barry, he got Barry a part as the second cop, along with Jude. You know, they come in, and Barry played one of the cops. Remember how they start calling in all the people to be interviewed or interrogated? Remember?
For The Sopranos?
For Glengarry. Glengarry.
Oh, sorry.
So
yeah,
Frankie got, through Tom Riley, got Barry in. And said, yeah, sure. And Barry just had to say a couple lines here and there. So his name is Barry Rawson, right? From Brooklyn. And Frankie used to call him Glengarry Rawson.
Glengarry Rawson.
I love that. And Alec Baldwin, that was a new character created. Yeah, and it was absolutely tremendous. Yeah.
Yeah. I vacillate between buying movies physically and I buy them digitally, but I have this collection that just keeps growing.
Really? There's not a false note to me in that way.
It's great.
Yeah. I mean, I never got involved in real estate, but I remember when I first was trying to work, and I worked in so-called spas or gyms that would be like LA Fitness now or Bally's. It was Jack O'Lane's. But, salespeople, I would hear salespeople, and we had to go to meetings, even though I just worked like running the gym or whatever I did. And it'd be interesting, that whole thing about closing and just that attitude that David Mamet just captures, like in life, just that whole way. And I mean, Ed Harris, everybody is so tremendous.
Oh, yeah.
Jack Lemmon. Oh my God. Let me pull more hot one. Oh my God.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, Jack Lemmon. Oh my God. You just reminded me. I'm embarrassed that I didn't mention his name first. You know, Pacino's Pacino. It's great. You know, the Broadway cast was phenomenal. Of course, Joe and everything. And just, it worked. I remember doing a reading. Ed Bianchi called me up. I was doing an off-Broadway show, and he called me Goose, like Goose Gossage, the pitcher. And I remind him. He said, "Hey, Goose, I need you to jump in. We're doing this thing set in Providence, Rhode Island, And we're doing a reading of Edward Albee's introducing us. It's been done by Ensemble Studio Theater in New York and LA, maybe in Chicago too. So these people all had done it. And it's a woman in it that wound up on Ray Donovan when I worked. I talked to her. She was one of the regulars, John Voight's partner, this and that, whatever. And I came in, and you were able to hold the scripts. It was a reading, but it was a Broadway theater packed, and Edward Albee's in. I'm like this. And I had to come out. I had like a couple of days of rehearsal. And Eddie said to me, so I got to say it's like 1981. Ed Bianchi said to me, Mike, there's a guy in this show, this cast, wonderful guy, but he has an energy. He's going to be huge. He's going to be like Brando, this and that, right? And the guy was a great guy. And when we did it, I'll tell you who it is in a second. He just lit up the stage, right? And it was Ed Harris.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Ed's got kind of the Illinois connection, too.
Really?
Well, his wife is Amy Madigan. Who's
of course. Yeah.
Our former state, I guess, majority leader who just got kind of booted out, he was a Madigan too. But that's.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. He's an old time guy. I mean, this guy's been around forever.
You know who I liked? I got to meet through Bob Title and some people. I'm still in touch with Bob Title. I'm friends with Governor Quinn. Okay. And he was really trying to help film.
Yeah.
He was a big supporter of film. He was a good guy. I liked him. Even he's still around.
One of our few governors to not go to prison.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
If there's one thing Chicago does well, Chicago and Illinois does well, it's crooked politicians.
Blouse? What was the fellow?
Blagojevich.
Blagojevich. And it was so funny. My friend Chris Charles, who finally got one of his scripts done really well, we did this thing, Chicago Overcoat, with God rest his soul, Frank Vincent.
Frank.
They were just out of Columbia College. And then he called me up. He said, listen, we're going to do this whole thing and stand at Governor Blagojevich, I can't remember his first name.
Rod.
Right. It's going to be introducing everyone. And he's trying to bring a whole bunch of filmmaking to Chicago because you don't realize, I mean, okay, lately with Dick Wolf, but Chicago would be here and there and it cycles. And I remember when I moved there was the cycle where I'd run into cameramen who hadn't worked in years and had to go to LA or New York or whatever, or mostly LA. I mean, the tide has really changed, but people like that, it was a big thing. And I just couldn't go for whatever reason, but we were all going to be introduced. So a lot of people think of me as a big pro Chicago guy, you know, and Chicago, and a lot of my life is there, like I said, grandchildren, and we spent time there. And years ago I worked at the Public Theater, really interesting production of a David Hare play. I had small parts in it, but boy, what a cast. It was called Map of the World. And Ving Rhames said to me one day, I was having some problem with the box of the door. I was a big therapist. And Ving Rhames, people see it as he was very diplomatic and quiet with it. And I could be a diplomatic guy, but I forget whatever it was. Probably has something to do with my family. I thought that I was being wronged. I don't know. And I was very. So he said to me, I did a show, Streamers, in Chicago. You remind me, I always told, God rest him, Dennis Farina. Well, I would always tell this story. He said, you should go to Chicago because you fit in. You act more like the Chicago actors. He said, you behave. You're brusque, down to earth. He told me, said, you're going to run into trouble with the New York theater and the snobbishness. This is Ving Rhames telling me. He says, said, you are more like a Chicago actor. You're like more blue collar. This, that was funny. And I took it as a big compliment. And I always love to tell Chicago greats. And the other funny thing I love, Dennis Farina used to give me a hard time. He goes, hey, Mike Starr, Chicago used to be my town. And oh God. He said, now I go to restaurants and someone says, Mike Starr comes in here.
he's somebody I wish I had gotten a pleasure to meet. I was very sad because he was a favorite. Yeah, he was a favorite early on because you did a episode of Crime Story.
Yes. Back
day, and he was on that, and that was, I know he had been in, well, no, he had been in Manhunter right before.
Yes.
And that's the first time, because I didn't know he was in, well, he was barely in Thief. But Manhunter is where I got to know him from. And then Crime Story solidified, because I loved Crime Story when it was on.
Him and John Mahoney were best friends, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They pranked each other all the time and did theater and whatnot. And Dennis was even doing theater when he was a cop. He was a homicide, I think, detective. And
yeah,
on Crime Story, McCloud. Chuck. Is it not McCloud? Oh, God, I'm going up on his name. I apologize. But he was, had been his boss, and he was a producer, I believe, technical advisor. And Dennis was just so great on that show. And he just made me feel so great. It was just one of my best experiences ever. He was, and we see each other, get together. I was actually supposed to go, I believe it was around his birthday party. And no one, people didn't, majority of us, no one knew that he had cancer, I think, for like 10 years. And then, right, one of my friends called me up who's not in the business, said, we're going to go to Dennis's thing. No, great. And then I couldn't make the funeral. I felt bad. He catered his own funeral with his friend Mastro, the famous steakhouse. And they said it was such an event. And the town, what's the town? You'd know it, just outside of Chicago, big Italian neighborhood. And I would work with up and hair people. I don't know why I always forget this. It's just.
I'm trying to think of what
they did their own thing for him there, you know?
Yeah, I'm blanking on what it could be because I
don't know if it's in Chicago city limits because I get
no,
mixed up.
But I know what you're talking about. Rosemont?
Yeah. No, not Rosemont. No. I'm thinking something else. No, it's not Rosemont. Where the Murray brothers have their restaurant, right?
Yeah. I haven't been there, but I go, in addition to my day job, I do like Lyft and Uber driving. So I'm always driving all over the city, but I can't believe I'm blanking on the place because I think I know what the town you're talking
Park.
About.
Park.
Melrose.
Melrose, that's it.
Melrose Park.
Yeah, Melrose Park. And
two of us together can come up with a lot of stuff.
Oh, it's so funny because I come out and I do the, when I can, Joel Murray and the Murray family have this first responders benefit. For things that people that had gone through things, whatever. And I have a lot of friends from New York from the fire department job and different people that go to it and we get involved. And I became friends with Tom Ryan, who just retired a couple of years as the union leader of the fire department, you know, the firemen, I should say, firefighters and women, you know. But geez, I'm trying to think different people that I became friends with. Joel has that. And I threw out a ball at the minor league team and they didn't make it, just hit the plate. So I thought I could do this. And Joel's giving me advice on how to do it. And I got to bring grandchildren and everything there, kids. And, you know, but there's a great stadium there, but it's like an independent league or a ball. It's really run well. It's fun.
I think I know the place you might be talking about, but I,
Trenton Rosemont.
There. Oh, that's not what I'm thinking of then, and so I'm drawing a blank on that.
Speaking of blanks, I was going to tell you someone. Well, you know, I got to know Jeff Garland, be friends with Jeff Garland.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He would put me in Zany. You know, I'd watch him in Zanies and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I'll see him. I mean, I haven't gone anywhere for the last 2 years, but
really
that much, you know. But he would hear me laughing in the crowd in like Burbank and he goes, Mike Starr out here. And he'd start talking about Mad Dog and Glory.
Yeah.
Kevin Smith loved Mad Dog and Glory.
Yeah. And you worked with him on Jersey Girl.
Oh, what a great experience. My buddy, Stephen Root, became friends with Stephen Root. And of course I got to be with Colin.
Yeah.
But yeah, Jersey Girl was just, you know, what's funny is that it was an homage to his dad. And I think a lot of reviewers or whatever were waiting for, you know, to see some kind of, I don't know, hot smoking movie or something.
Well, yeah, it was, he was going for his raunchy stuff. Yeah, at that time. That was a definite left. And I have to admit, I haven't seen that in a long time, but I probably wasn't very kind to it at the beginning when I saw it, because it was like, Kevin Smith is doing a movie about a kid?
Yeah. It was interesting. I had very talented people, and we got to do, but it was really, I thought, subtly funny and this and that. And George Carlin, one of the hardest working people I've ever been around.
Yeah,
he was great. Got to spend time with him.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you about some other. Okay, so you worked a couple of times with Spike Lee on Clockers and Summer of Sam. What was that like? I mean, are you close with Spike, or did you just happen to get cast in both?
What happened was, I'm trying to think when I first met Spike, but we had we talked mostly sports. And Spike always treats me well. And I was doing an indie film, John Gallagher, rest his soul, we had so many wonderful, fun people on, called The Deli, where I played a degenerate gambler who lived with his mom. And it was a lot of fun. And Michael Imperioli and Victor, I'm going over his last name, Victor, who I met actually on a set of...
Victor Argo?
No, oh God. There's a classic. Scorsese loved him. But no, Vic, I'd be terrible. I want to say, oh God, this is terrible. But they had written, Victor, and when the Son of Sam was out, the actual Son of Sam, the person, and a terrible thing, I had just been married a year or so, living in Queens. And I actually was working in a club, and I saw one later on after they caught him, one of his victims, and was in a wheelchair, a woman who had been shot, but Ed Zigo did something with us on Offbeat. Me and Joe got to know Ed, and Ed was the guy who I think eventually was the guy who really caught him and got him. But I always related that it was about Queens, you know, Son of Sam. And Victor, strangely enough, when my wife got into med school, we moved to my friend Jack McGee, an actor you'd know, was a fireman. Live with us in Pelham Bay Park. I said, what are you talking about? And wound up living in Pelham Bay and becoming Bronxites. And Victor had lived in a neighborhood where they thought they very well were right, saw Berkowitz running, because he lived in Yonkers, I think, which is north of the Bronx there. So they saw him. I didn't connect. And then also they did about the blackout. So anyway, on the set of The Deli, Michael, who's gotten me in a few things, Michael and Vic came up to me and they said, listen, they had to do this scene where they were, Frank Vincent had, you know, they were in trouble with Frank Vincent, the mob guy. I forget they had their arms, bro. I forget, whatever, some comical thing, you know. And while during the break, they said, Mike, you'd be great in this thing we're doing about the summer of the Son of Sam. And that whole period, I said, whoa, he said, oh, yeah, the Bronx. And he's telling me about, and that was the famous blackout. And there was this 77 at the Yankees and everything. And I was a Mets fan. Forgive me, Chicagoans. But I supported when the Cubs when I was there, or White Sox guys I knew, you know. But still friends with Ryan Dempster, among other people, and Glendon Rush, who was on both teams. So anyway, they said, it'd be great. Then they said, we're working with Spike. So at one point, they wanted Danny Aiello. Not them, I guess the powers that be. God bless old Danny, who I was friends with, and his son as well. And we became friends on a natural. Someone's a stunt coordinator. Both him and Rick. Rick did acting and stunts, but Danny he was my friend. And I think at one point, either he didn't want to do it or something changed. And they said, we think you'd be great. But I think at one point, after doing Do the Right Thing, Spike wanted him and he'd be a classic character. Mm-hmm. And whatever reason, it didn't work out. Sometimes Danny was telling, well, I wouldn't let, you know, there was a scene where that got cut out where Adrian Brody there were a couple, oh God, look at the Italian name. She was tremendous. And they jump on I'm sorry, I'm going up on a name. I remembered it the other day.
No, sometimes, I know. It's been a while since I've seen the movie,
but I know. She's wonderful. And what happened was all of a sudden I wound up doing it. So there were all these scenes shot, you know, and again, friends with the crew and Mike, the big Mike, the AD, and I had that live stuff that they said, Spike, why'd you take that out? So I got to know Spike on that. And that was an interesting working experience because he didn't get into like motivations. He goes, Mike, can you play Drunk Mike? Can you do a Sinatra impersonation? I had to sing it and whatever and record with Terrence Blanchard and the combo, you know, in the studio. It was great.
Yeah.
This is a record scene. But there was a point, oh God, I'm going up on a name, where so many of their scenes were cut out and they focused more on Mira Sorvino and John Leguizamo, who I worked with John a few times, another great guy, and Mira was wonderful. But there were scenes that we did that were cut out because I think Touchstone had the final cut on it. Could be wrong. It was, and they wanted to focus those two. Adrian Brody was not known at the time, really, that, you know, yeah, he hadn't won the Academy Award. Right. And I had all these heavy scenes, like I have a big argument with him. I chase him down the basement and I accidentally knock over Patty LuPone's wife, my wife. I knock her over. She has a gambling thing there or something, you know, and Adrian and, oh God, forgive me for not knowing this, please. She jumps on my back too.
Yeah.
Oh, you got to look it up.
I'm looking it up because, yeah.
And
go ahead, keep going.
Spike told Victor, well, this is something it sounds obnoxious to say in public, but supposedly Spike turned to Victor. I found this out a few years later and said, Mike's going to get nominated. Because I had to do this scene where I was a drunk and nasty, and then I break down and cry in Patty LuPone's lap. So he was just so happy with it. And Victor told me, he said, Spike thought you were going to get nominated, this and that, supporting act. This is what I heard from Victor, so I don't want to be quoting people. It's not something right. I would want to print. But that's what they told me. And I said, yeah, really, right? Well, why? If it was so brilliant, why wasn't in it? And he said, well, they had a focus on different characters. So Adrian and
Jennifer Esposito.
Jennifer. I keep thinking Deborah, Jennifer Esposito. And they were great. And I remember seeing this. I loved the movie, but I remember going up to Jennifer. I said, Jesus, about 11 scenes that you weren't, you know, whatever. And whatever choices they made. So I'm not questioning Spike Lee or whoever.
Right, right.
But it's a focus, like I said. It's not like, hey, they took it out because you were no good, you were this, or you were too good. I don't like to do that, you know, or
right.
They were this. But evidently, there was a focus on, that's what I heard. I don't know how true that is.
Right.
If someone was just trying to make me feel good. But Spike, it was interesting for the, well, I was just turning 50 around there. And we did it right around where I had lived in the Bronx at one point. And Spike, he would just talk to you like, Mike, I need this. I need a two shot. And there was a woman, Sonia, was I think West Indian. She was great. She was a famous acting teacher and a coach. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like anyone under 40, she was talking to, right? You know, about motivation and all this stuff.
Right.
And the characters, it seemed, we were like, or under 30 or whatever. We were like, you know, here, just do it. Just do it. You know what to do. Hey, say something funny, whatever, you know? And I went, oh, I'm going to go over. And I wound up talking to her and getting her help, you know, and saying that. And she really was a tremendous help. But, you know, Spike was about the shots and he trusted you to get in. And then it doesn't mean they're better or worse than other directors. Different people have different ways. Some people really want to get in because how do you feel about that? What do you think what he just said? And then some people just want to say, yeah, this, you know what you're doing. You know, just do it. Right. Like Tim Burton came out one day, we were doing Ed Wood, and I had this scene with Johnny Depp. The first time he comes to me, I guess, and talking about the posters. I said, fuck no, we got a poster, whatever my line
was.
Say that. And so much fun. And I'll forget, Tim goes, my star. And I go, ooh, what did I do wrong? What happened? And he comes in, he goes, oh, you're good. You know what you're doing. Just keep doing what you're doing. That was the only direction I got from
him. Yeah, yeah. Well, that was one I was going to talk about because that's one of my favorite movies. And
I didn't digress too much. I wound up
because
a lot was cut out of that we did because it didn't fit. We had a race and run with Fred Rostar, but that was enough. But, you know, I'd show up in things that he produced, like 3 a.m. and whatnot. And then there was a grad student did something with a lot of really good people. One of them's on Chicago, the Australian guy who's on Chicago Fire now. They, it was called The Girls in Trouble. I don't know whatever became of that. But anyway, back to.
With Ed Wood.
But I love working with Spike, and I want to work with him again.
That would be great. I mean, he's still making really great movies.
Oh, yeah. I wish I was in that one that they did out in Colorado.
Oh, which was that?
The Klansman. That was out in Colorado.
Oh, all right, with Denzel's son.
Yeah, it was great.
David, yeah.
So now on to Ed Wood.
Ed Wood, so you're the guy that basically gives Ed Wood his first break because he sees an ad in the trades looking for somebody to do a real person's, like, life adaptation. Then you lose the rights, and so you're still going to make the movie, like you say, you know. You got the poster, so you got to make the movie now.
Right.
Sold it to, like, Arkansas or something for the drive-in.
No, Oklahoma, what is it? We open in, Oklahoma in 6 weeks? So I'm trying to remember if I mentioned the
town.
It
was two random places.
Yeah, like, I said, we opened, he says, do you have a script? Fuck no, we got a poster. Those perverted Okies really like that shit.
And so he comes in and he sells himself on you because he has the unique perspective of being a cross-dresser.
Right.
At the time.
Are you a fruit? No.
Right. Yeah, so I like women very much.
he mention also, or maybe my little research did, because the character that played Georgie Weiss looked opposite of me, but I met his, I think it was Ed Wood's, Ed Wood's wife, his widow was at the movie theater and was talking to me about George Weiss. But I think at one point, either through reading or he says it in the scene, that he was in the airborne or the
parachute. Yeah, yeah,
underneath his
uniform. Yeah, yeah, that movie is number one. It's fascinating. But and then he goes, you know, Ed goes and makes his film that your character absolutely hates.
Yeah. Shoot whatever baloney you want. Yeah, I'll tell you whatever. Yeah, yell at you know. Now that was, you see the authors there. Is he from Chicago? Stravinsky. He wound up doing so many great things, but that was a lot of scripts, 110 pages or whatever. I forget, most 120. That was, as I remember, 147 pages. I don't know what I did with that script. Probably gave it away. But was interesting. There were friends cut out because they just couldn't fit in. But we had a few other scenes. One of my favorite things is to play a guy sitting in a movie theater, you know, like watching the cuts and everything. And I go, what's this? What's that? What's the buffalo herd? What's it? But they wound up, there wasn't time for it, you know? So you see it quickly, like, you know, a montage, like even Spike put a montage of some things I did, you know, and it was part of a whole montage. I wasn't the star of either one of them, but you see the buffalo herd or something.
Taking the buffalo are nervous. Did you get to meet Martin Landau?
Oh, boy, did I. I got to tell you. I just want to, can I just turn on the
heat? Yeah, go ahead,
California, I'm cold. So Martin Landau, I had lunch with on the set. Somehow, the captain sat with me. Oh, my, I couldn't wait to talk to him about everything. But he told me, I don't know if he was from Queens or his sister moved to Queens, where I'm from, a few miles away from where it was, an area called Forest Hills. I'm from Flushing. And we had the greatest talks. It was just so wonderful to be around. And you'd watch him, you know, do the Bela Lugosi, and we'd be hysterical.
Oh, God, I always liked Martin Landau, but that is a career-defining performance, and he justly deserved that Oscar for
absolutely,
because that's a movie that I watch that movie over and over again as much for him as anything else. Yeah. It's such a wide ranging character portrayal. It really gives, you know, the warts and all of who Lugosi was, and afraid to do, you know, do everything.
No, I believe that Tim Burton was a big fan of Vincent Price. And while we were filming, I believe Vincent Price had passed away, you know?
Right.
But he was a huge Vincent Price fan, as I admired him. And it was funny. I mean, it was funny for me to do the whole thing of Lugosi, isn't he dead? You know?
Yeah.
Well, what would you do if you had, what would you have said, kid? But I had great lines that they wrote. Ed, it was Ed, right? That was the writer, I think. I'm trying to think now. God, his first name. But great lines.
Oh, you're like, talking about Larry and his writing partner. Yeah, they've done a bunch of stuff together.
Yeah, and I say, you obviously have me confused with David O. Selznick. I don't make movies, I make crap, right? And
yeah.
Says, yeah, but what if I gave you a star? Yeah, crap with a star, you know?
It's a tremendous movie. That one, it's a classic. So that's like one of the ones you've done that, you know, I it's because it's so far high up on my list of favorite films.
Right.
That, you know, it's like, it's so cool to see you in that. You also worked with the Coen brothers twice on Miller's Crossing and the Hudsucker Proxy.
Flew me to North Carolina and Hudsucker Proxy just to make a face.
Yeah.
Mike, can you do your fish face? And just go, yeah. And I just have a couple lines. They go, yeah. And their friend, was it Willie Reale? He was really helping like people that weren't into theater, people who wouldn't get the opportunities. He had a theater on in Manhattan, but he says, you know, still want to run Steve, boss, you know, because they asked me, and all I did in Hudsucker Proxy was go, I would love to work with them again. Of course, you know, it wasn't a right fit or wasn't in the right place, the right time, maybe, but I have to tell you, Miller's Crossing was one of the best experiences I've ever, it was just,
that's my favorite Coen brother. Well, that and No Country
really
Men are my favorite Coen brothers movies.
Is that and what?
No Country for Old Men.
Oh my God, how great was that movie?
Yeah.
I have to say, I wound up doing a film in that town where they were. They filmed in Las Vegas, New Mexico, which was like rival Dodge City, they claimed back in the day, you know, and they that Justified, they do something else like that. Justified or one of those. Not Justified, something else. I don't know if you said.
Yeah, I'm watching Justified now, and I know that they filmed that all in California.
Yeah, it's not Justified. It's,
they made it to look like Kentucky.
Another Western type thing, but you know, Kentucky, right? And he's great, Tim Olyphant. I got Miller's Crossing. Remember meeting them, but we would have communications. I used to tell people that I would give them images all the time. It was almost like three guys, we talk like cartoons. Like, you know, when Gabriel Byrne, I have to walk at him.
Yeah.
And he said, Mike, can you give me the gorilla walk? And I said, how about if I give you half a grizzly bear like from the cartoons walk? He goes, let's see it. And, you know, I did this like something out of the cartoons, Daffy Duck, whatever the bear coming at him, you know, and we would laugh all the time. And I would use all these references. And one of the things they got a kick out of, and years later saw me and would do it, these silly bits I would do. So we're dressed in these 30s and we're in some woods in Louisiana. And I said, you know, we should do the Sears catalog here. I'd have the hat. They said, what's that? And I would pose like the Sears catalog models. Now, this would mean nothing to people under 40, I think, but you'd get these Sears catalogs all the time, and other, and still ads, they do it, you know, they'd show a guy like this looking at his watch like that. Oh my God, they used to do it. Give me a Sears catalog look, Mike. And I'd go like this, and here I am in these crazy woods in Louisiana doing that. And it was just so much fun. And so there was this scene where it says Frankie sings a Neapolitan song. Now, I'm not Italian blood, but I had a Sicilian Godfather. Not I don't mean in any long way, but you know, dad. He was, you know, so I picked up these habits and I studied Italian. But and not to be a cool, just it was a cultural thing with me. But when I was able to take a student loan, I spent time in Italy, like 6 weeks with one of my friends from the football team and one of my friends from the drama department. We just had the greatest time. We were way up north. And one day this crazy teacher who taught English, we were drinking grappa. Hopefully he wasn't, I wouldn't remember. We were in a rainstorm in this little car going down. I remember in this thunderstorm, and he taught me the song in Italian. So it was kind of a racy song at the end of it, you know, make love, da da da. So we were singing it, me and my friend Phil Garfinkel. It's like a Woody Allen character. And we were, and it would, the reason I'll tell you, it kind of goes bimba bella faccia, amore, da 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 da, like that, right? So yeah. I read in the script, he sings a Neapolitan song. It may not have been a Neapolitan song, but I thought it would work anyway. And I went up to Joel. No, it was Ethan, I think I went. Yeah, Ethan. Maybe together, because Ethan, I think John Turturro used to do great impersonations of John. So great.
Yeah.
It was almost like an off-the-wall New York Joe Mantegna to me, because I would wind up working with him in Shakespeare. Just a great, passionate, good guy, you know, and brilliant actors like Joe is, you know. And Joel would sit there like we were, and Ethan would walk back and forth like this, you know, like that, just, you know, thinking of something. But they never missed the thing. And they just had this beautiful warmth about them. And I just, like what Scorsese, I like bonding with laughter. You know what I mean? Not like, hey, did you hear the one about the guy? I don't mean that, Mike.
Right.
But more like, you know, just laughing and observations or whatever it is, you know, and imitations. So, and I nicknamed people all over the place and they just loved it. I nicknamed Gabriel Byrne Hamlet. Like, Gabriel was just super to be with, you know, he was just tremendous. But he made his own video on the set of, they had just come in with some kind of camera. I'd love to see that someday because I'd imitate him on it and this and that. But anyway, so I see in the script says Frankie sings in the Apollo's when we're taking Gabe into the woods, right? Al Mancini, yeah. God rest his soul, is the guy we were partners with, right? And
right. And
we're walking in the woods with Gabe, and it says, meanwhile, Frankie sings a Neapolitan song. So I said, would you like me to sing? He said, you know a song? I said, yeah. So I sang that song I learned some 20 years before, whenever it was, like 1971 or whatever it was. And I sang this song, and I decided to dance on the log and this and that. And in some St. Cloud, Minnesota paper, the Coen brothers were saying, Mike saved the movie. I know that's not true. Mike really knew what it was about when I saw him, like, twist on a log, like a kid. I was behaving like kid where other ones, you know, just like I did with Jesus, Tom, you know. And I started doing all this stuff and just having fun. And you know, other times I was low-keyed or whatever, or serious. So I get this call, and they're editing. And they said, we have a different song for you to learn. And this is a story I like telling. We have a different song. And they give me this song. And it's in some dialect. And I was like, oh, my God, you know. So we were in the Bronx at the time. My wife was in her last year of med school, I believe. The three kids. I actually got to bring my son down to Louisiana. I was like 9 or 10 at the time for 10 days. Coen brothers and the producers are just so great to me. And crew, everybody. And we got to do these really cool things. And I would take different kids to different places. But anyway, I go in this room and I said, okay, they give me the tape. I said, holy shit. They show me, I'm trying to remember if I saw the scenes first. And watch them edit. And I go to one of my neighbors, and they were really great to me. It's two neighbors. One guy was an emergency service cop, you know, and rescued people. And the other guy was from Rome, Jimmy.
Okay.
And they were brothers-in-law. And they kind of, I was new to the neighborhood. I wasn't used to, I came from a very mixed background. In fact, the last place I had lived was an international neighborhood. So you had people from all over the world. It was built for UN workers in Queens back in the late 40s, you know, for the UN. And there were famous people. And my friend Smitty, the Cockney, through a woman from Ireland and the Scottish got me in this neighborhood for like 6 years until my wife got into med school and we moved to the Bronx because cost to go on the bridge. And, you know, she was right there. I told you about Jack McKee. So anyway, I go to Jimmy. I say, Jimmy, I got to play this song for you. I don't know. I have no idea what, I don't understand it. He goes, boy, this is a dialect. This is hard for me too. And I was going to different, because there are people from Ireland in the neighborhood and people from, but it was mostly old Italian American neighborhood at the time. But then there were people from Southern Italy there, and it was an interesting area. It's called Country Club and Pelham Bay in the Bronx. And this is the 80s. And
okay.
So they're trying to help me. This story is going somewhere. I swear you're going to love this. So I said, oh, Christ, I got to learn this. And they're trying to help me with it. Said, this is really tough. So I'm just doing it phonetically now. So at the same time, I have to go to Toronto. There was a movie called, was Mike Newell, a British director. And the woman from Kate and Ally and the original Saturday Night Live.
Jane Curtin.
Jane Curtin was the lead. And it was about busing and the battles, racial battles and everything in Boston, in South Boston at the time. And she was playing someone that wanted peace and make everything right. And guess what I was? A guy from Charlestown who was a rabble rouser. And I had enough friends around Boston and relatives that could help me with it. I had Irish friends, and actually through my dad's marriage, through my dad's sister, my uncle Ray Panatti, you know. So I knew Italians and Irish, and I was pretty good with the dialect. And my friend Frankie taught me, tested me, in fact. And I had to play this guy wearing a Celtics jacket. I had to say all this stuff. So why I'm telling you all this is I land in Toronto, and it's something wrong with my work visa or work permit. And I'm getting ready to do a Charlestown accent or Southie, people might say, or whatever. And I'm working on this thing. And we shot it Matter of Honor or Anna or something, or really kind of interesting about the times then, you know. And when it happened in the early 70s, cover of Life magazine is really a big thing. It was about busing and whatnot. I was a guy protesting and arguing at the meetings and giving her a hard time, you know, and really bad reactionary, kind of not playing a nice person. And anyway, so I've got that in my head. But now I know that in a week, I got to go back with the Coen brothers in the editing room, this famous place on Broadway Video or something, and on this big screen. And I'm going to have to go in and sing this song. So, by the way, when you see the movie, so I'm trying to learn this thing, and it goes kind of, I'll give you the pace because it's in the movie. Ilan de la ave familia, da, da, da. So before the pace was da, 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 da. So now I've got to learn the song. So those were the days of Walkmans, and I had the headsets. And I'm sitting being detained in customs, right, or whatever, and I'm going, Ilan de, oh, great. Ilan de ave familia. And this woman about this big, that wide, your wonderful lady comes over to me. She's working and she's got the gray uniform. She goes, what are you doing? What are you doing? I said, oh, I'm an actor. I got to learn a song. I'm sorry. Was I making too much? No. Come here. I heard you singing something. Let me listen. True story. I love telling this story. She puts the headsets on and goes, this is my father's town. You see the dialect? What are the chances in this universe of that happening by chance?
Yeah.
She goes, this is Pavarotti singing about how he loves it. Now, it almost sounds French in this one. Look, why I throw you a kiss. And she's doing, I'm detained a couple hours. They finally got the work permit. I'm watching people like, you know, debate, arguing, getting out. No, and they're sending them back where, this and that. And I'm like in the middle, you know, like serious stuff is going on. And I'm learning this song for a movie.
Yeah.
Are we okay?
Sorry. My mother just popped in.
That's cool. That's all right. So I'm learning this song, as long as I'm okay, because I'll finish this story up. So I'm learning this song And she taught me the whole thing. So I'm filming by day or afternoon or whatever night. And on my break time, I'm learning this thing in Italian. So I'm doing a South Boston American accent. And now I'm learning this thing. I go back in and they were amazing. It's all because this woman taught me. I had it all phonetically written out and everything. So I go in and sing and we go to the New York Film Festival. It opens it. And there I am. But what happens is, since I was like this a lot of times, they had to put the camera on sideways and it looks like quickly I'm like maybe it's dubbed. Right. And the Coen brothers apologized to me not putting me in the credits that I sang the song because other people thought it was either an opera singer or the guy who sang Danny Boy, who was Irish tenor.
Right.
And I went, So I'm a lunatic. When someone tells me I like Miller's Crossing, I tell them, that was me singing, you know. That was my big deal. Some people would come up still and say, there's no way of telling who's going to like Miller's Crossing. I just had an old friend, like my first girlfriend, said, hey, you know, I finally saw that Miller's Crossing. I didn't like it. You were great or whatever, you know. And I said, I really can't talk about this. This is too special to me. Well, I didn't think that Irish guy was good. David, I said, you kidding me? You know, like, you almost want to get into an argument, like you're personally attacking me because I love the film so much. And I thought it was so unique. And
it's one of my favorites of all time.
Man. I love hearing that.
So I got to see that.
If you see it again, you'll see how
I've watched it a number of times, but I have the story. I'll be able to watch it differently.
To switch gears a bit, I was lucky enough to work with Gene Wilder.
Okay.
I mean, everyone, I have wonderful experience. De Niro coaxing me, and Mando and Gloria, we laugh so much, but in Goodfellas, that scene. And there were some other quick things that were cut out where Martin Scorsese was asked me to make a joke or insult Maury and be a second over. They found out later and had to cut it out, but by the fourth cut, Thelma told me, but great. But and De Niro, I mean, I have so many people, Dustin Hoffman that I worked with, that it was just such a great experience. Yeah. So I don't mean to exclude anyone. I've tried to mention people, but, you know, sounds obnoxious. I feel like Kramer accepting the Tony Award here, you know, saying, oh, thank you so much. But on Seinfeld, but Gene, it was such a special experience. We did these two TV movies. He had contracted, or they knew about him having lymphoma on the second one. And then he did well and he went on to go do Will and Grace and that years later. But just to sit around talking to him, but it was you couldn't wait to get to the set. Sherry Jones, all these people, a woman 6 feet under. So many of this German actress. If you look at the cast, the man from Lost, Terry Quinn, is it? There's so many great people in it, and the stories were so great, and it was set 1938. I love it. Murder in a Small Town. He did a thing about Crystal Macht in Nazi Germany and this and that, you know, opening the story, and it was just such a beautiful experience. You ever get to see it, the Murder in a Small Town and a Lady in Fire. And I think initially they wanted to do a series like Murder She Wrote, but Gene was writing them and felt that it was going to water it down too much. Right. And then I think he was trying to do 6 months at a time, whatever. But finally, it just didn't happen. But it was one of my greatest experiences. I want to throw it out. He told me great.
Oh, that's awesome.
Stories and.
No, it's cool. It's not something I've seen before. So I didn't. It's not something, you know, I've been trying to focus on stuff that I've actually seen. You know.
Sure. No, I just thought I'd throw that in that I was.
No, that's great. I'll have to check that out. Well, I don't want to take up. We've been talking for a while, but I do want to kind of get to a couple Please. More things, and then
if you ever want me to come back again, I'm glad to do it.
Oh, I would I love like to. Spirit. Yeah,
and yeah, I'm very fun. Partial to the whole Chicago feel too. Anyway,
yeah, no, this is great. So I've probably saved the two that you might be known for the most for last, and one is Dumb and Dumber. Where you're in the van with Jeff Daniels and Jim Carrey, and they're annoying the hell out of you.
Yeah.
That was an awesome scene.
The first time, I want to say, that I had no idea that was coming. The world's most, and Jim screams right in my ear, and Jeff. And I'm like, and it's funny because I get irritated by silly things or whatever. And my kids, my wife, old friends would say, you made me aware of it before I wasn't a kid. So it was like everybody's laughter and revenge at me because he was doing that and screaming in my ear. And I was like that, and I didn't have to act. And it was so funny. It was so funny to do it. And you just want to, I believe one of those scenes in a van, if it was that or some part of it, had to be reshot because the great design that they had of the, the dog van or whatever.
Yeah.
I think the fur was just a little too much down. So we had to reshoot something, I think. Right. Mockingbird or something like that. Or maybe that's all part of the same thing.
Right, right.
I heard it's on a list of great improvised scenes.
Yeah.
And I really couldn't tell you if it was sketched out by the Farrell Girls. I have had people stop me in gyms or ask me, so did you improvise that? I said, I know they did. I think the one line I remember improvising, I believe, and people still kind of do it. Not that I'm the first person that ever said this, but the thing I did was to repeat, guys.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think I said, guys, can we just play the radio? I forget if they edit that. The Farrelly brothers are so great. I don't like when actors take too much credit for lines from writers or directors. Right. Yet you're talking about Jim and Jeff coming up with ideas that were brilliant, whether it's Jeff with mustard and the ketchup or something. I think that was him, and then
yeah.
Both of them did it or whatever. Or Jim whispering my ear saying, Mike, pump your legs twice as I'm dying there. The third time, shove me back,
Yeah.
And they're both, boy, sound like a talk show, but both super talents. I mean, Jim, there's a song he wrote that he snuck in there. They snuck in there when he's waiting for her he's got the cowboy hat. But Jim, one time we were hanging out watching hockey and he did Sinatra for me. He was so great. And Jeff, we would talk about plays he wrote about his theater, The Purple Rose. But Jim said, pump your legs twice and really shove me back hard, he comes flying back in with the Venetian blinds and I just want to crack up, So I think that's, I can't remember who did what or this and that. I don't want to say, oh, that was his idea, this, but they were just both so inventive. And it was so strange for me to see Jeff, with the hair out doing that comic, because I'd seen
some
things where he might play, lack of a better word, a prep guy, this and that. And that thing he did, Newsroom or whatever. I mean, he's just so tremendous.
Yeah.
And then Jim, so multi, to be in between those two. And Cam Neely, the Hall of Fame hockey player, I would say Hall of Fame human being, was the Seabass. So I kept taking credit for being his acting coach.
that movie, I remember, I don't think I've seen it since I saw it in the theater. It's a comedy, sometimes you don't want to go back because you're worried it might not be sometimes as funny, or a suspense film might not be as suspenseful,
That's an interesting take, yeah.
Some things you just don't want to have your memory ruined of the experience. But I remember I took my sister to see it, and we just laughed like idiots throughout the whole thing. That is one of the best dumb movies ever made.
Absolutely. I've had people say, I'd never do a movie like Dumb, watch a movie like Dumb and Dumber, But things, generations still, like I do those cameo things that come out of Chicago, you do something, you talk. Yeah. I wind up talking about most of it's for Dumb and Dumber because people say, I've watched it a million times, I've watched it a thousand times. I took my brother to the screening, Bo.
Yeah.
Who I wound up, by the way, later on helping get into film. But he had a whole different energy from me, and he's just great. And he would tell me things. But we laughed so hard watching that. Yeah. And it was just so much fun watching it. And I don't watch it off, but I'll stumble on it. And I'll just be hysterical when I see something like Jeff with the gas pump, and sitting there and he's talking. And it looks, I laugh at the silliest things. The only brushes or dailies I watched I watched, when I got there, the Farrelly brothers say, you got to watch this. We would laugh so much all the time. And they had so many friends in sports and hockey and this and that. But we watched, I watched the, his tongue getting stuck on the ski lift. And then the snowball fight, which I think is one of the funniest scenes I've ever seen in film.
I
love seeing it. You know, I'm a big Young Frankenstein and Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. You know, and the original producers, you know. But I that's what I could say. But that scene in the van was really something there, though. And you just didn't know, but you knew you were part of something. And Jim would just come up to me in public and go, you were such a desire. And he'd walk away. I could be getting interviewed like this or talking to someone. And, you know, and I got to throw in my own things, that laugh, which was a guy in Queens that went, I talk about being in the wrong place. And great lines like, I'm a businessman on his way to a, you know, onto a luncheon in Davenport. Can you give, and they let me do this whole thing like, sweet guy, because I was always so miserable talking to Duff and this and that. You don't kill who you don't know. That's a rule. I mean, they just have such great stuff.
That it was just that those scenes were, I mean, the whole movie, but those scenes were so, I mean, I couldn't imagine.
I can come back and just talk about that. And good.
I couldn't imagine working with, especially back then with Jim Carrey at kind of, you know, the real beat, the beginning of his acceleration in the, you know.
You know what's funny? He said that he had wanted me for something on Ace Ventura.
Okay.
And someone at my agency said I wasn't available. That happened. That's happened a couple of times. The agency I used to be way back when, some person, I don't know who it was. It couldn't have been my main guy, but it's crazy. And it worked out better this way than the. And what's funny is that the Farrelly brothers told me that Jim and them had seen me in Mad Dog Glory and, you know, different things. And that Jim really wanted a guy who had played serious mob guys in films.
Right.
And years later, once or twice, someone, a young person would say, oh, no, I don't think they'll take him as a serious mob guy. Isn't he a comedian that was in Dumb and Dumber? You know, it's so crazy if you do too good a job.
Well, that's the thing about being in so much stuff. It's like, you know, you could be known for almost anything, you know. And well, I want to ask you two more questions, and I'll ask you the one I just thought of first. What film or project do you think was the best one, best set you were ever on?
Oh, God.
Enjoyable or best role or whatever was the overall best experience?
Is that hard to say?
I can imagine
being with Gene and what a great time was. But and I mentioned how on and off with Dumb and Dumber. I love creating the character on Black Dahlia, being with Brian De Palma. But you know, I don't want to say any buts, this and that. I'm trying to think. Bodyguard. Could you imagine being on that?
Yeah.
And Kevin, I learned so much from him. And being with Whitney and going to lunch with her, and she's so phenomenal. It is so hard for me to answer that straight focus. Miller's Crossing had its own energy and its own fun. But I have to say, and Mad Dog and Glory, that was a special role to me, you know, and that's when that introduced Chicago to me. But it was like trying to do something that was completely non-cliched, and Richard Price felt the same way that I kind of typified what he wanted, and that to be with De Niro, Bill Murray, Uma, and so many wonderful cats. And that it wasn't like a forgettable guy. Not that there's anything wrong playing that.
No, but you were playing something different.
I tried to play him from a guy from another planet, another world. But I have to say, something special about Goodfellas, just being around Scorsese, not everything made it into the movie, but it's interesting. People yell out, comment down, because I did my research. Scorsese had me meet with De Niro. People, you wouldn't believe how much went into that scene, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was like, here, Martin Scorsese says, Mike calls me over there. I think I was at a wardrobe fitting or something like that. And I got to see Funny Like a Clown, Joe Pesci do that, right?
Yeah.
And he said, I need you to go talk to Bob. And that was a whole story. And where Robert De Niro just sat there and asked me questions. He'd go, I need you to do this. And he's not controlling at all. He lets you flower unless you're screwing up or this and that. But it was just such a thrill. And here I am. And it was just us rehearsing, Ray, Robert De Niro, Ray Liotta, Robert De Niro, myself, and Scorsese. And they'd say, okay, and Ray would say, oh, I have to get this line in about the security guard, this, because, and then Scorsese, leave a space. I said, okay. And we worked out stuff. And then the department heads came in. And then finally the crew came in. And then we did it. And at one point I had read the book, Wise Guy by Nick Pileggi. Mm-hmm. And I had said something to Martin Scorsese, and I wanted to be like I was shot out of a cannon, you know, because he wasn't first of all mobster, he wasn't a guy talking like this and threatening. He was Frank Zavero, who played Frankie Carbone, said, I was lucky enough the night of passing the key, actually kept breaking my balls, but I'm sitting with Charles Scorsese, Martin Scorsese's father, and Frank Zavero. I was sitting in, Frank said, how are you going to play this? What do you mean? He said, no, the way you're talking now, that's the way the guy was. So I had this freedom just to allow. And then finally I had said something that I read the book. I talked to this detective that was on it, who I introduced to Robert De Niro at one point, and he knew the cases, and he was a character, not the technical advisor. He had played a smaller thing in the beginning, and the technical advisor knew his own thing, whatever. But I felt so prepared for this that anything could happen, and felt so pure and clean, if I could put it that way. And then I said to Martin Scorsese, I said, you know, there's a line here. I know Nick wrote the book and the script goes, what is it? I said, I think get past the alarms, because they had to do something, make it in the script and just get it through. You know, a lot of times they couldn't. If you see, you read the book, you see how Frenchie and him got the key. It's hysterical.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
and it's a whole chapter, but it would be a whole movie in itself. And maybe someday make a short film of it. But the whole crazy thing is, I said, but he says alarms. And Scorsese said, yeah, well, what about it? I said, well, that's the beauty of it. There was none. There were no alarms. I read the book and this and that. And they took. He goes, all right, Mike, say whatever you want. Yeah. So I felt anything. And De Niro would tease me into it, like in a good way, you know, like. And I'd like to say that he told me, I can't remember, when he got quieter, that I got louder. You know what I mean? Going, oh, yeah. Because that's what Frenchie was, according to Frank and other people. He was this, just loved stealing and this and that. And he was exuberant, which worked against these guys. So it just came to me. And finally, I'd say something like security, like De Niro would say, what's security? You're looking at it, because there was none, really. There was one guy, you know, Ray throws in. He was a
cop. Things weren't as, you didn't expect people to be ripping people off like there was.
There was
more innocence.
Yeah. And it was the Air France heist. It was not the Lufthansa.
No.
It was involved.
Right, it was earlier. It was
like 130 grand. And I started saying everything I knew from the book to say, you know, Frank, you know, people would say to me, well, where'd you come up with that? I said, it's in the book. Servicemen in France and tourists, American tourists, sends cash back. It's totally untraceable. Now, I threw out a totally untraceable, but it's just a logical word. Totally untraceable. And then it was something else. Oh, and I read that it was a Jewish holiday on Monday. Someone said, oh, it was a great idea. Come up and said, no, that's what happened, I said.
Yeah. You know, it's
Jewish holiday Monday, so they will know. They will know by then, you know. Because it was an extra day. It was a holiday and da-da-da-da. And finally, when he says, security, what are you looking at? I finally said, I'm the Midnight Date Man. Because there was nothing. Like I said, people wouldn't accept. It was Idlewild Airport in 68. And, you know, the Vietnam War was going. So I at the height of it, Jimmy would say, so I finally went at them. I'm the Commandant. So I was going to say, here, Commandant. So I said, Martin Scorsese, like my sense of humor. And he says, Mike, Commandant? I said, well, it's 68. Hogan's Heroes is one of the big TV shows. That generation, my generation, was brought up with World War II film, Steve McQueen and Great Escape, Starlock 17. He loved my film references, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, he respected that, because he respected my knowledge and history of film. And he finally, I said, there was always a comment that he goes, I love it. Keep it in. So yeah. We do it again. So I'd have to say that was one of my purest experiences, but it's hard to say. I mean, The Bodyguard was my first job that they flew me to California. There's a lot I'm probably not mentioning that were wonderful. There were things that never got anywhere, some films that were really interesting experiences. But, you know, like I said, Miller's Course, it's hard for him. Does that make sense? I mean, I don't
know. No, I get it. I knew it might be difficult because you've done a lot of different things. I was just good for what it could change tomorrow what your opinion is. Actually, your answer worked out perfectly because my next question was going to be about Goodfellas, and I think you've pretty much given me a lot on what I was going to ask. So that's kind of actually a perfect, perfect combination of the two. But yeah, I mean, you've done so many damn movies and things and everything that.
I did a film, Bereaved, Malcolm McDowell. My friends, we stayed friends. My Greek brothers, my buddies. They were so great. And I really enjoyed that. Keith Carron and McDowell, Jane Seymour. I did this Making a Killing with Michael Jai White. So many people, if you see that. And this young first-time director, Devin, and my friend Jude Moran. And just, we really worked on trying to make this. And sometimes, it was funny, this one, Making a Killing, was compared to Blood Simple. And there's this guy, they call me, there's some show in Kenosha, a radio show. I'm sorry, I keep forgetting the name of it.
No, that's okay.
So every now and then they have me on it for months, and it's so respectful, and it's a film show. And when they saw Making a Killing, they said, boy, that stretches the imagination. You really this, that? You were the mortician and the mayor. And I told Devin, because it was based on something that happened in Colorado, he said, Mike, not only was that true, but I held back on some other outrageous scenes with your character would be with Christopher Lloyd's character, smoking pot. You were the only mortician. And I said, why didn't you put it in? He goes, well, I thought people wouldn't believe it. Listen to that. I said, no, that would have made it even more unique. But, you know, and then he was a first-time guy listening to some editor of this and that.
Yeah.
Or people saying, no, you can't put that in the script. And I said, that's the chance the Coen brothers took where they didn't care. Or Spike did, where he didn't care if people were going to say, well, I don't know about that. When it was actually happened or, you know, things like that, you know. And that, you know, there are films that may not, there's something coming out, hopefully, Clowning. And it's a young director out of Cincinnati. You should check the cast.
Okay.
Young woman, I believe originally from West Africa. She got honored at Sundance and first-time actresses in a first film. And it was, a low-budget thing, but I almost kind of open and end it, but narrated it. So I played a detective, right? But it's mostly younger people in it. And this wonderful guy who plays the guy who gets sucked into Clowning, this guy Jonathan. And it really was an interesting experience in it, out there selling it. But then he calls me up right before the whole pandemic started. He said, listen, I got this idea for a short. And there's a singer, an actress, Tara Macri out of Toronto, and her people want to fund it. And if it's any good, we'll do a bigger one. But I'd like you to play this guy. It was an interesting story. I'll see if I can send you the trailers on it. But Sean Connery's grandson was in it. He was a character, like kind of burnout kid. And it was just the three of us. And it was right. There was a break in L.A. where they said, oh, it's okay now, but it may be coming back. It was like in the beginning of it or what I forget. It was like right around before Thanksgiving. And we did all the SAG rules in a low budget, but I get producing credit. But also I went back to that friend, Tom Wright, I mentioned Apocalypse Now, for technical advice about certain things with weapons. It's interesting, really interesting story. But it's my first time really to be considered on the other side, help produce. Maybe we discussed things. This guy was flexible. And I said, well, maybe you wouldn't say this. Maybe we could improvise that. And that was a great experience. I'm really yabbering, I know.
Yeah.
But I'll have to tell you about
that. No, you're good.
supposedly yeah, we'll have festival. We're going to get awards in. Tara, myself, okay. and the director. So I'll let you know about that. It was called...
okay, awesome.
Yeah, it was Outcry, but there was also some other things called Outcry, so you can get confused. But see my name at Mike Star Outcry. And Patrick, geez, I'm so bad sometimes on last names. I do nicknames. That's okay. You know?
Yeah, there you go. Well, you know, I'm probably going to do this as I might do this as a two-parter because I hope I gave you enough. You gave me plenty. No, I think it's great. Is there anything else that's coming out that you know of that we haven't talked about? Is there something coming up?
You know, recent TV was Blacklist, which was great with James Spader learning. Boy, he worked so hard in such details. And, you know, I was lucky enough to work with Bill to do just the two of us do Shameless together. I did an episode and Ray Donovan with John Boyd cast and the director, one of the actors and whatnot. And, I'm going up on people's names, but he was wonderful. So I'm trying to think. Yeah, that will be coming out. I also did something in Chicago. My friend got me involved in, and he was a prodigy of Bob Title. Oh, I should have been prepared for this. I did that. I'll find out. It's interesting. Catholic school kids like who had, you know, on the edge of Chicago in the suburbs. And I'll think of the name of it. If you just look up my IMDb, it's.
I will.
The high school thing, but I did the scene of the scenes of the get off my lawn guy who's shooting BB gun packets at the kids that are pranking them with dogs or whatever, this and that. And it was so much fun. And my friend Hope Quattrocchi, I had done a film with her and she got me involved and she was friends with the director, author. What a great guy. Oh God, why can't I think of the name? It's terrible. It's
all right. Hold on. I'll look up your stuff. Feel free to vamp.
Oh, okay. Definitely. Yeah. That was a lot of fun. He really had it together and they really put a solid production together. And it was Chicago. We just did it last summer. Would I do it in June or something? Yeah.
Let's see here.
Throw some names at me. Sometimes things are in, I go, what? I wasn't in that one. Someone says that we're in production or whatever. I said, I'm
trying to see what, by the posters, what might look like something like that.
Well, you see clowning, but this.
Yeah, I see clowning. I see outcry.
Yeah. Is there anything saying it's in production?
Yeah, no, I'm looking.
I'm a great interview,
All mobbed up. Is something that says it's in production.
Yeah, no.
There's a couple of pre-productions.
You want to throw some names at me?
Well, they're pre-productions. So they Desert Dick, the Italy Boys.
Oh, the Italy Boys was like 15 years ago and they still put that in. I don't know. That was in Detroit. This guy said, I have this thing. Can I put your name in it? Jeez, yeah. I mean, half the people, I think, not being facetious, have passed away that were involved in Italy Boys. Desert Dick was going to be this thing in Palm. These wonderful people I worked with. And it keeps being put on hold. It was a funny thing. It was supposed to be the chief of police in the town rides a bicycle. It was a good idea. And there's this, who's kidding? The mayor's kidnapped. His wife is kidnapped. Something. It was a comedy. People I worked with, Sessions, I worked with that.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't. The Cleaner.
I'll find out. Huh?
The Cleaner?
No, that's way back. Oh no, The Cleaner is Chris Charles. Now that's really good. That was that should be interesting.
Oh, this might be it. Hardly Functional. Was Bruce Campbell in it?
Oh my! Oh no, you know that was.
There's some kids in this. So there were some kids in the cast. So that's why I can't figure out based on what I see here, what it would be. Because everything else has come out like a couple few years ago.
Who is Bruce Campbell? What did he play?
Evil Dead.
Huh?
The Evil Dead movies. He was.
I think that's a while back. But you know what's, yeah, that was, but you know what's, what was the one, the Outer Banks, the school, the high school show, something like the lead from that is in it.
Okay,
and hold on. English people. Kid from Outer Banks.
Hold on. Outer Banks. I'm not sure about that one.
This is terrible. If I could look up.
All right. Hold on. Cast. This is fascinating, I'm sure, to everyone. You mean you're looking for a kid?
Yeah.
Chase Stokes?
Hold on 1 second. I want to just say something. Oh, gosh. Chase Stokes. I'm sorry. I'm trying to find it, actually. Let me see. If I look under, I'll give me 1 second.
Yeah.
Hope Quattrocchi is in it. I know it's a great name. Her dad's classic Italian. Sounds like he was a really great guy. Okay, let's see. Because I'm going to look back over messages here.
Yeah, I'm not able to find it on my end.
Yoga graduate. Give me, bear with me. I got my
website. No, you're okay.
Jeez, hope you had a great rest of your birthday. Not quite, don't worry, I didn't even mention to. Got me involved with this. Now I see the pictures of it. This is terrible. I got pictures I can send to you. I'm getting there. This is a great interview, huh? I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. I don't think I wasn't able to find anything that remotely jibed with your description. So either it's not in IMDb or something, or I just missed it.
Is all my pictures of we had to get COVID tests and this and that. Almost there, Bob is here. We were at Las Garol. No. I'm on the wall in Las Garol. Can't believe
in Chicago?
It. Yeah.
I know. But I haven't been there, but I've been meaning to get there.
Ah, the Crusades.
Okay.
The Crusades, that's what it's called. These high school guys, because they were the Crusaders. That was the name of the team. Got to do some interesting scenes, two scenes.
I'm going to look that up.
I think it's Crusaders or Crusades.
Hold on.
I'm sure you can edit this.
Yeah, I don't have anything on here. I'm having a hard time finding either. Interesting. Yeah, there's nothing like recent. There's like old stuff. All right, well, we'll be on the lookout for that. Yeah, I'll probably cut this part up, honestly, because we both kind of got lost in our phones for a minute. I can't imagine it's interesting to anyone. I figure this is a good time to let you go. But I cannot thank you enough for doing this.
Anytime.
Definitely maybe we could kind of get into, narrow in on a couple more things, a little bit.
Whatever you'd like.
But I really appreciate you, and and hopefully when this thing's over and you come to Chicago, maybe I can take you out to dinner or something.
I'd love to do that. There's so many places.
Yeah.
You used to write for the food there, huh?
Yeah, I used to write for Eater here in Chicago.
Jeez, I kind of know.
That's all.
John Hogan had so many people at restaurant. Luigi, yeah. They would take me to such great places. John Hogan would take me to this Korean place, and Hogan, they had people come from France to see him. They did an article on me, and then the same guy we did from the Sun-Times an article on John Hogan, and I said, he may look like the guy that comes to fix your air conditioner, and then all of a sudden there's French chefs and people coming to come to him, and
Yeah, I met Hogan when he opened.
I think he's a food purveyor now. I got to ask him.
Yeah, I know. I think he kind of semi-retired from, or is retired.
Yeah, now he's got connected.
He was at a place called River Roast on the river.
Yeah, that was his last. last place and things happen there, but he was living far away from there. And now he's, you know, he introduced me to Anthony Mantuano.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's how I got to meet John is through Anthony.
Right. So now he opened Anthony used to love the way imitated Luigi, you know, and I met Luigi through John, of course, like the year 2000, I think. But Anthony opened a great place in Nashville, I think. So I think John might be doing some food purveying, they call it, right? And things like that. And he's doing very well with it. And we just missed each other when I was in Chicago. I just missed Tom Ryan, fire department. I said, oh my God, we were supposed to hook up. And it was so quick that I was there, you know? And John. Oh, the laughs I had with John Places. We went, Donnie Cruz, God rest him, got the biggest kick out. We went with a group and we were in Chinese Air Chinatown. And there was some place where people were lined up all outside. Okay. And a lot of Chinese people, Chinese American people, a lot of different people from Chicago. And the act is not getting in there, but I finally went to someone, John Hogan. I know John Hogan, and people came on, John Hogan, you know, John Hogan, you know, and they brought us up. And Donnie Cruz could never get over that we were laughing. So we went in there and John would take me. He knew the family and everything with freaking watermelon juice, all this stuff. John taking me to French places. He's taking me Korean, Italian, Luigi, of course, Italian. There's just so many. And Chris Chelios, some friends. I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But a Greek town, you know. And, you can get anything in Chicago like that. It's so amazing.
For the most part, there's always few cuisines that there's hardly any, you know, any place for. But, you know, it's the.
Hungarian it's, with my friend Teddy. He used to take me to Papakash, Teddy Cheese. Who's still in. Teddy is one of the owners or silent partners of the Liars Club, but I filmed it actually with Chris Charles, but also he lives in Arizona half the time with Kathy, and it just so many interesting people I knew in Chicago, so many colorful, kind people, so many different people. My friend Chris Haynes, who played with the Bears briefly, but caught famous passes at Notre Dame, and he had a karate school there, and Chris was a complete nut, lovable guy, and just so many people I became friends with, actually a lot through either through Luigi, Donnie Cruz. I've introduced Luigi, Donnie Cruz, and Hogan set off. I mean, BJ Murray, I'm sure you dealt with back in the day, huh? He was a promoter.
I'm not. I've got to be honest with somebody. I'm not sure who I haven't heard.
He used to take me to Tempo. When I first got there, he took me to places. Okay. BJ was from New York, and he was a character, real dealer. But he was him and my friend. My friend Russ Brunelli, who's now in California running a great place in Ojai, Russ ran the China Club.
Okay.
And
that's a while ago.
Now I'm going back. He had a China Club in the Limelight. And my friend
Barry.
But yeah.
Yeah, just, well, the city has changed.
I know.
Much over the last 20 years, even the last 10 years. It's not quite the, I mean, you come here, you know, I mean, you know.
Yeah, it's not that it just, I don't know, maybe, you know, Tony at one point was ready to move to New Orleans.
That was before his heart attack, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, went through that, and Donnie was still alive.
Yeah.
And yeah, Tony, well, he's phenomenal. Tony, I went, he gave me, had me wear a friend Coley, who was Harry Carey's son-in-law. Coley's from Galway, Ireland.
Okay.
Big Cubs guy, right? He was the only guy allowed. He put the radio on the headstone of Harry Carey when the World Series and this and that. Coley Newell is my friend, and he used to run the place. Wasn't far from Wrigley Field. It was an Irish pub. And
I think I know the place.
Coley and Tony are very close now, Bob Title. But last time I was there, Tony Fitz gave me, I got to get your number. I'll give you my number. You can, we'll email each other, you know, so I can send you photos. But Tony gave me a White Sox hat that was red with the White Sox on. We took photos.
Yeah.
Coley's a big Cub guy. So just like Luigi was a Cub guy with Mark Grayson, Hogan was the White Sox guy. They'd take me to their stadiums, you know. A lot of fun with that, you know.
Yeah, what I'll do is I'll send my stuff to the person I was talking with, and they can forward it on.
So, and where did you say you located?
In the suburbs, near the Indiana border. It's called Lansing.
It's called what?
Lansing.
Lansing. Yeah, I know that my son.
I mean,
travel a lot. My son does too.
Yeah, it's south. It's like
daughter-in-law and the kids, huh?
Yeah, it's southeast of Chicago.
Yeah, because my daughter-in-law is from, I'm trying to think where she's from. Her dad was from the south side. I think the dad and mom's from the south side, but it was an area I can't think of. And, you know, I know, what, Capone's? Do you know the Capone? You know the Capone? The place Capone's? He's the great-grandson of Al Capone.
Oh, like, no, that I...
In a reality show. I met him on...
okay.
And I know that I'm supposed to be leaving now, and you can't get rid of me. Different people in different places. I just, I know what I want to say. His name is legitimately Carl Amari, and his son's an actor. And, you know, you have one of the greatest casting directors there, and Claire Simon does such great work. And actually, my manager and friend is at, there's an opening at the Goodman tonight, and I think he was visiting Donnie Medea at the Thompson at the, you know, Nico's, the great place. What a great place, the restaurant. But Carl bought all the rights to old radio shows, and he bought all the rights to the Twilight Zones. And these radio shows will be on late at night, this and that, even Armed Forces Radio. This, I've had Frankie Rinzulli hear me in Boston. I've had people hear me in L.A. And Carl has some kind of film show on at night. But we did them for the radio with all these stars, and I did about 10 of them.
That's cool.
And they rewrote them as radio shows.
Awesome.
The old Twilight Zones, yeah.
Yeah, because nobody.
What's it? Not Barrington. What's the area?
Finesse.
Schaumburg.
Oh, and Schaumburg, we
record them there with all sorts of interesting
people.
With Chicago actors, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. That's awesome. That's out past O'Hare.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because I'm
right, my friend.
Sort of out in that area, too. Yeah,
well, anything I can do, just get in touch with me.
No, I will. And I'm going to try to, I'm not very good with the editing, so I'm going to try to edit, you know, it's just transition to get, so it's...
Big difference, it's a tough thing to do.
But I really appreciate you taking the time.
I tried to tell the truth.
Harwell,
the old Tigers announcer, said, I think I've done all the damage I can do for one day.
I think that sounds fine.
All right, my friend.
Hopefully we can talk again, and I wish you the best of luck.
Absolutely. Feel free to stay in touch with me.
Yeah,
I'll get you my info.
Yeah, continue to health and safety and all that, because this is a hard time right now.
And God bless to the family to you.
Oh, thank you. Yours too. Thank you.
All righty.
All right.
Thank
Take
you.
Care, man.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you. Bye.